Well, a third thing happened on last September. In addition to the national security strategy and the need to the massive propaganda campaign to push the panic button again and convince Americans that Saddam Hussein was responsible for September 11th and is a menace to our security, partially for electoral reasons, but partially for other reasons. The new doctrine of preventive war is intended to establish what's called a norm in international relations, a norm in international law. Well, a norm in international law isn't set by countries like, say, India. It's set by the most powerful state in the world. When the most powerful state in the world resorts to violence, sober international lawyers will write complicated articles about how that's now establishing a new norm in international law. The new norm was, and therefore you can go on from there to the next stage. An interesting history of this, but no time to talk about it, though it's very interesting. You want to establish a new norm in international law. It's not enough to announce it. Of course, the new norm is only for the powerful, so nobody else is allowed to carry out preventive war, just us, right? But the new norm is supposed to be that the United States can carry out preventive war. You want to establish a norm. You can't just say it. You also have to illustrate it. So you have to find a case where you illustrate the norm. Well, how do you do it? The target of preventive war has to meet a couple of requirements. The first requirement is that it has to be completely defenseless. You certainly don't want to attack anybody who might be able to defend themselves. That's ridiculous. So it has to be completely defenseless. And secondly, it also has to be important. So there's no point attacking some country in Central Africa that nobody can find on a map. It has to have some importance. Well, Iraq happens to meet both conditions. It's totally defenseless, utterly weak to start with. It's a poor third world country, but completely devastated by a decade of sanctions, which has left it virtually on the edge of survival. It's the weakest country in the region. Its military expenditures, for example, are about a third of those of Kuwait, which has 10% of its population and far below others, which is the reason why nobody's afraid of it, except the United States. I mean, they may hate it. They may hate Saddam Hussein, but they're not afraid of him because they know that it's the weakest country in the region. In fact, when the U.S. takes it over again, it's probably going to rearm and may actually develop weapons of mass destruction just to counter the other forces in the region. So it's defenseless and weak, meets the first condition, but it's extremely important. It's right in the center of the major energy-producing region of the world. It's got the second largest oil resources. It's an enormous source of strategic power and global influence and also flow of material wealth back to the right pockets. You can't imagine, I mean, there's going to be a big issue now about somehow reconstructing Iraq from the wreckage. And here's a task for the enormous global peace movement. Too late to stop this attack, but you can at least try to ensure the least harmful outcomes. One of them ought to be that the United States and Britain ought to pay reparations to Iraq for the devastation that has been carried out during this decade of sanctions. If it's too much to expect that level of honesty, and I presume that it is, at least they could provide massive aid to the people of Iraq to rebuild their society in their own way, and not in a way that's dictated by foreign rulers who, in fact, supported Saddam Hussein right through his worst atrocities and well beyond, and that's the people in Washington, and then devastated the society in the following 10 years. Well, that's an important task for the peace movement, exactly as it's an even more important task to prevent the norm from being put into effect elsewhere, as it will be if there's no objection. Plenty of targets of opportunity that you can think of, the Andean region, Iran, others. And if there isn't any substantial opposition from the mass popular movements in the world, that's pretty much what's likely to happen. What have the sanctions actually done? Well, they have devastated the civilian society, killed hundreds of thousands of people by conservative estimate. Statistics are grotesque. Iraq was getting close to first world standards. It's now at the level of countries like Cambodia in things like, say, child malnutrition and child infant mortality. Meanwhile, the sanctions strengthened Saddam Hussein, and they compelled the country to become dependent on him for survival. He's a brutal tyrant, but an efficient dictator. And he ran an extremely efficient food and aid distribution system. And the World Food Organization says it's the most efficient one they've ever come across. They don't think they can get anywhere near half as effective. Well, that compelled the devastated society to be dependent on the tyrant for survival, and it undermined the possibility of a revolt that might have overthrown it. Is that outlandish? Not at all. Remember that the people now in Washington supported Saddam Hussein was not the only monster that they supported. There were plenty of others. So they supported Duvalier and Marcos and Ceausescu and Suharto and a whole string of others, many of them as bad or worse than Saddam Hussein. Take, say, Ceausescu, Romania. Strongly supported by the Reagan-Bush administration right up to the day of his overthrow. You know, 2 days before, there was a visiting delegation from Washington to convey George Bush's greetings, just as there was another one to Saddam Hussein, led by Senator Bob Dole a couple of months after that for Saddam. Well, he was overthrown from within. He's a vicious, murderous tyrant, but there was a functioning society somehow they were able to overthrow him. There's every reason to believe that the same would have happened to Saddam Hussein. He would have gone the same way as the others who they supported if it had been possible. But the rug was pulled out from under people. It wasn't possible. They were devastated. Saddam Hussein was strengthened. They were compelled to rely on him. Now, this has been pointed out over and over again for the last 10 years by the people who know Iraq best, like the UN Oil for Food administrators who had a big staff of people running around the country, respected international diplomats. They can't be heard in the United States because you take a look at the New York Times index, you won't find their names. But you can read them in Canada and England and other places. And they've been making this point for years, as have others, and it's a very sensible point. The problem with the population overthrowing Saddam Hussein is it does not leave the United States in charge. And that's a crucial fact. If you look at George Bush's ultimatum last Sunday, it says Saddam Hussein should leave, but we're going to invade anyway.